Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you all for coming to learn a little bit and get a little bit of chizuk, or give a little bit of chizuk on Erev Shabbos. Once again, sadly, we're still not back in shul, and we hope to have Yeshua Hashem Bekarov Mamish. I just want to again start with the three questions that a number of people have asked, that we go back to our normal minhag of asking three questions on Friday night. So we'll start with the three questions. Just someone asked me that I never answered last week's three questions. That is true. I never answered last week's three questions. In a nutshell, if anyone remembers what they were, one was about a chassan who had tested positive for the coronavirus and the kala had not, and whether they should go ahead with the wedding, having that knowledge. So supposedly they asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and he did a Goral Hagra because he thought that this was too difficult a question to answer. I was a little surprised by that. I didn't, if they were a young couple, I didn't understand, especially since if they live in a community where it was very likely that it was spread all over the place, so I didn't understand why we would hold back a wedding based on that, but Rav Chaim Kanievsky wanted to do a Goral Hagra, and I believe in the end he did hold back the wedding based on that, the way the story goes at least. Another was about grandparents who insist on attending their grandchild's wedding, even at risk to themselves. So I think the proper approach, with the okay of doctors, would be to make sure that every precaution is taken, where they could stand at a distance and where proper protection and masks and the like are worn, just to make sure that nobody comes in close contact with them, if at all possible. But if not possible, then it's very, very difficult and it's very challenging, but we certainly can't risk lives for the sake of even something as important as attending a grandchild's wedding. And then third question was about reporting a shul that still remains open if it's against the law. To do so, can you report them to the authorities? So I believe the answer in this case, if the authorities are fair and just authorities and these people are a threat to the rabbim, that the answer would be yes, that one may report them to the authorities. In fact, it came to my attention that there were some shuls that were doing this, and I myself threatened to report them to the authorities if they don't seize their activities immediately, because this is not a joke. This is a very, very serious thing. This is a matter of pikuach nefesh, and we can't let people be rotzchim. We can't let people risk other people's lives just because they feel like that's how they express their religion. Okay, so those were last week's shailas. As far as this week's shailas, before we get to our divrei Torah, someone told me that in a number of the New York hospitals, they are no longer allowing husbands to accompany their wives to labor and delivery. That the wives have to go in on their own, meaning the husband could drive them there, but they're not allowing the husband into the labor and delivery room. And what they're doing to make up for that is they're FaceTiming or Zooming the husband into the delivery room so that he could sort of be there for moral support. As useful as a husband, I guess, ever is during labor and delivery, he will be... he'll have to be that useful over the FaceTime or the Zoom. So a fellow asked me, his wife is expecting their first child. They're very, very nervous. They're very excited, but now they're more nervous than excited, I would say. And now they have this discovery with Pesach coming up that he's not going to be allowed in the hospital. So as Shiloh was, would they be allowed to do a FaceTime or a Zoom on Yontif or on Shabbos in order to allow him to sort of attend the birth of his baby? Meaning we know that the concept of the Yesuve Daita, to calm a woman down when she's in labor, is a very significant concept in halacha, and would even be considered like pikuach nefesh. So is the woman knowing that her husband is there on the Zoom or on the FaceTime, is that a liyasuve daita kind of consideration, or do we say, no, that's taking it too far, he doesn't really need to be there on the FaceTime, and she's going to have to, with a strong supportive nursing staff, as Baruch Hashem many of the hospitals have, and certainly in labor and delivery, nurses are wonderful and much more useful than a husband. So maybe they shouldn't allow such Chil Shabbos or Yantif. So that's Shaila number one. Shaila number two, nothing to do with coronavirus. Someone sent me an email that his wife had purchased a shaitel back in September 2018, 18 months ago, and the lady she bought it from had texted her just the other night that she just found an $1,150 check that they had given her that she forgot to deposit. They had no clue about this, that this woman had not deposited it, but she feels that maybe, they're not sure, maybe they did pay her in some other way. This lady that sold in the shaitel tends to be a little bit scatterbrained, and it could be that she lost it back then, and it was replaced back then. Maybe they sent cash instead. They don't remember. They honestly have no recollection of whether they paid it or not, and they called the bank, and there is no record of an $1,150 check deposit. So maybe the woman is right, but they really have no idea. They don't know if they owe this woman the money. All they know is that this woman says she just found a check and she thinks she never deposited it, and it seems that she never did deposit it. So what is the status? Do they have to pay for that shaitel right now or not? That is Shaila number two. Shaila number three, going back to coronavirus, I got the following email from someone who was registered to be on a Pesach program this year. As you may be aware, a number of the Pesach programs are trying to figure out how to work out the refunds and the deposits while still maintaining some level of viability, that they don't all go under, which is certainly a great threat to happen to most of them with this tremendous loss. So the following email I got says as follows. The program is canceled and we received the attached letter from the program sponsor. The person attached the letter, but he explains. The sponsor provides the guests with two options. The first is to receive 65% of the deposit back in cash today, and the rest, the remaining 35%, will either be paid out in cash in three equal installments over the next 3 years. Alternatively, you can use a third of that 35% as a credit for their program in each of the next 3 years. The second option is to forgo the cash today, and instead the sponsor will give you a 105% credit of your current deposit to be used at your discretion over the next 3 years. So the question now becomes, wait a second, that second option, that you forego cash today and you get a 105% credit of your current deposit. So is that a violation of ribis kitzutza? Is this a violation of interest? It would seem that in option two, he writes, you're actually lending the sponsor 65% of the deposit today and are getting back more in the future. Does the answer depend on whether the sponsor has any obligation at all to return the money? Or in option two, is it like you're re-lending him the money today in any event? And it goes on and on, a number of the considerations, whether that is a violation of ribbis. So those are our three shailas for this week. Maybe at some point over the course of this week, we'll have an opportunity to have a shiur to answer some of these questions. But I wanted to share with you some Divrei Torah going into Shabbos, really just two vartlach, and some ideas associated with those two vartlach. The first is right at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. Vayikra al Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem Elov Me'ol Moed Lemor. And the Medrash comments that Moshe Rabbeinu actually has Yud Shemos, that Moshe Rabbeinu actually has 10 different names that he is called. The Yud Shemos that Moshe Rabbeinu is called, Yered, Chaver, and it gives a whole list. But, says the Medrash, Hashem chooses to call Moshe Rabbeinu simply by the name Moshe. Shem Shekarascha Batya Basparo. That's the name that Batya Basparo had given Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the name that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to use for Moshe Rabbeinu. And while that medrash is interesting in the sense that Batya Basparo got to name Moshe Rabbeinu more than his parents got to name him, more than anything else, But what's somewhat surprising is the placement of this medrash. Why is this medrash here at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra? Already at the snare, we find that Hashem calls him Moshe. So why wait till Sefer Vayikra, after the Mishkan is already built and we're about to learn about the Karbanos? That's when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to call him Moshe? So I saw in the beautiful Sefer Shemen HaTov, he points out that the Sforno asks that really Moshe's name, as given by Bas Paro, should not have been Moshe. It should have been Mashui. The Pasuk says that he was called Moshe, Ki min amayim mishisihu, because I had drawn him from the water. I had pulled him from the water. So he was drawn. He was pulled. He was Mashui. He's not Moshe. I believe, as I think it was our good friend Rabbi Natan Farber pointed out, that in the old movie, The Ten Commandments, this didn't translate very well, that line of min amayim mishisihu, because in English it said, and they called him Moses, for he was drawn from the water. So shouldn't he have been called Drew? Why was he called Moses? It doesn't translate well in English, but in Hebrew, that's what it was, that they called him Moshe, ki min amayim mishisihu. But really, says the Sforno, it shouldn't be Moshe, it should be Mashui, that he was in the past tense, he was drawn from the water. And the answer is, suggests the Shemen HaTov, is that only somebody who had previously been in danger and experienced the Yeshua's Hashem is able to truly understand the experience of others who require a Yeshua, is able to truly be Moshia Acherim. The Medrash is teaching us that when a person goes through something, they have to, something severe, something significant, something life-altering, they have to carry it with them the rest of their lives. It is not supposed to be something that you experienced once and you put it out of your mind and you forget about it. You know, you had this challenge and now it's over and now you forget about it. No, it's something that's supposed to change us, and it's something that's supposed to be with us, and we use it, as we discussed last week, to help others who go through similar challenges. And maybe that's what the Medrash is teaching us by placing the name of Moshe Rabbeinu, or they're highlighting how Bas Paro's name holds Dafka and Sefer Vayikra. After already building the Mishkan, you would think he's so far removed from that little baby that needed to be saved, from that infant that was in the water, that was in the reeds, that needed to be saved, that he was Mashoi, that was past tense, that's an old story. So no, says the Medrash, Moshe, he is still a Moshe, he views himself constantly as Moshe, in the present tense, and that's why he views his life as a responsibility to pay it forward, to help draw others from dire straits, to strengthen and to support other people. You know, we have never felt so fragile. The most solid institutions that we've known, things that are constants in our lives, jobs and financial markets and professional sports and our health and our families and everything, our ability to roam freely, our ability to daven wherever we want. It's all a gift that Hashem nasan v'Hashem lakach. And when we come out of this, bekarov be'ezras Hashem, we have to realize that we were Mashui so that we can be Moshe. We were helped so that we can help. We are going to be saved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to provide a Yeshua. And when we experience that Yeshua, we should never ever be the same again. We should always carry with us the fragility of life, the recognition that the Ribono Shel Olam, and only the Ribono Shel Olam, is in charge, and that our job on this earth is to do the Ratzon Hashem, to help the Ribono Shel Olam's children. And what we're seeing in terms of the people that are interested and trying and wanting to help is really overwhelming. And I just want to make a bit of a push. It's not comfortable for people who need help to let it be known that they need help. I understand it's not comfortable. But believe me, at this point, it's the greatest chesed you could do for people to allow them to help. People want to help other people. They want to be able to pay for part of a Pesach for somebody. They want to be able to do shopping for somebody. They want to be able to feel like they're taking care of the Ribbono Shel Olam's children. Don't be shy. Please reach out. Reach out to me. You could do it in a very quiet way. And if you are in need of anything at all, please do not hesitate to ask for help. And I would just add one more idea that maybe we can to take us into Shabbos. Pasuk says in this week's parsha as well, Daber al bnei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem Adam ki yakriv mikem karban la'Hashem. That an Adam brings a karban la'Hashem. So Chazal have a famous comment that's so often misunderstood or is difficult to understand, which says, Atem kruyin Adam, ve'enu masa olam kruyin Adam. That the Jewish people are called Adam, but the nations of the world are not called Adam. Which on its surface makes it sound like we believe, God forbid, that other human beings in some level are subhuman. But chas v'shalom, nothing is further from the truth. There was a famous blood libel trial against Mendel Bilus, and the following story occurred. There was the chief rabbi in Russia at the time, Rabbi Meza, relative of Jackie Mason, no doubt, was called to testify on behalf of the Jewish people in this trial, and he was a key witness to sort of defend Klal Yisrael. And he was having a strategy session with some of the great Rabbanim of the time in advance to figure out how they are going to respond to some of the questions that they anticipated. And one of the questions that they anticipated in order to demonize the Talmud and Talmudic Jewry was this question of the Gemara tells us, Chazal tell us, Atem Kriyin Adam, and no one else is called Adam. Do you believe that all non-Jews are subhuman? And when discussing this with the Lublina Rav, with Rameir Shapiro, he suggested that the answer should be as follows. Rameir Shapiro said that what happens when a Jew is arrested on a false blood libel? The entire Jewish people tremble for his welfare and would do everything in their power to remove his prisoner status. And how would the Gentile world react if one lonely individual had been accused of a similar crime and was standing trial in some faraway country? The people in his town, in his family would be interested, in his town maybe a little bit less interested, but maybe in other parts of his country, but the world over, there wouldn't be much interest. There are genocides that happen that most of the world is completely oblivious to, that we don't even pay attention to. And that's the difference, says Rameir Shapiro, between Klal Yisrael and other nations. The Jews are considered Adam, the singular form of the word man, because there is no plural. Ish has anashim. There's a plural for ish. But there's no other way to describe man in plural from the form Adam. It's Adam. It's always singular. And what that represents is the singular nature of the Jewish people. That when one of us suffers, we all suffer. And this is something that maybe is a message for us to take from all of this. It pains me to say this. And it pains me to admit this, but I think, in a very real sense, our delay in reacting, our, I guess, reactive instead of proactive nature toward dealing with this horrible virus is partially due to our failures in appreciating this sense of Adam. There was not only an entire countries that had this virus before us, there was an entire frum community that had this virus before us. We watched it. We heard reports that people are ill. But did we bother to ask how ill? Did we think about what it means that a person is on a respirator, that a person is on a ventilator? Not a community in a million miles away from here. New Rochelle just had a couple of weeks before us, and we saw what this virus can do. And yet, we were still so late in shutting everything down. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is going to be. L'achermeh ve'esrim. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked me, what took you so long? Didn't you see what was going on? I'm not speaking metaphysically that this is some sort of divine punishment. I don't know the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm speaking practically. We heard people were sick. But what did it really mean to us? Just two Thursday nights ago, I was having a conversation with a very dear colleague, a very, very precious Jew, Rabbi Aryeh Zev Ginsberg Shlita. Aryeh Zev ben Edel, he should have a refuah shalema. And he was telling me that he understands why I was going to close my shul at that time, because after all, my Das Torah, my Rebbe had said that that was the right thing to do. But he couldn't do it against the advice of the people that he normally asks his shilas to. That's Rav Ginsberg. Always supportive of everybody else's decisions, respectful of all gedolim, this time undoubtedly to a fault. But trying to follow what his Rebbeim tell him to do. And I begged him, I said, Rabbi Ginsberg, this virus is no joke. There are people on respirators. We're rabbis. We've seen what that looks like. We visited people in hospitals. We know what that looks like. And he heard me, but he cannot bring himself to close it down at that time. And then he sent me a beautiful email the next day telling me that he supported my decision. I can't help but wonder if I was giving him the virus as I was talking to him. It's hit us so close to home. This week was a very, very painful week. I don't know how many of you know how painful. I don't know how much I'm at liberty to share. But many family members of community members and some community members themselves need a refuah shleima. They need our tefillos. We need to feel that it's our family members. We need to feel the sense of Adam. We need to feel it with everything that we've got. To be there for other people. To be there for the families who we can only virtually be menachem. And only virtually be mechazek. But I don't want to go into Shabbos on a negative note. We're about to experience Shabbos. Shabbos has to be uplifting. Shabbos has to be a time of menuchas hanefesh. Shabbos has to bring a certain comfort. I want to share, I didn't ask permission to do this, but hopefully he'll be okay with it. I want to share one positive note. I want to wish a mazel tov to the Kupfer family on the birth of a baby boy, to Duvi's brother and sister-in-law. A family that suffered a terrible loss this week. Very, very sudden. And has now seen a new neshama brought into the family. It brings to mind what the Shulchan Aruch writes in Yaradeya, Simen Shin Tzadi Dalid Si'if Dalid, based on Yerushalmi in the third parak of Moed Katan. The Shulchan Aruch says, Kol Shlosha Yamim, for the first 3 days after someone passes away in a family, Yire ha'avel ki ilu cherev munachas lo ben ksefav. The avel has to see it as if, has to view himself as if there's a sword between his shoulder blades. Mishlosha v'yad shiva, between day 3 and day 7, ki ilu zokov kenegdo bekeren zavis, the sword is still in the corner there, threatening him. Mishiva v'yat shloshim kiilu over lefan of b'shuk, and between shiva and shloshim, as if it's passing him in the market. V'kolosa hashana hadin metucha k'neged osa mishpacha. And that entire year, the sense of divine judgment threatens against that family. But then says the Shulchan Aruch, v'im nolad ben zachar ba'osa mishpacha. If a baby boy is born in that family, nisrapes kol hamishpacha. It will provide a refuah for the entire mishpacha. It is my sincere hope that this is a microcosm of what we're about to experience in Klal Yisrael and the world over. That there is a cherev munachas ben ksefav, but there is a refuah, there's a turnaround. There's a ben zachar, there are new neshamos that come into the world. There are simchas around the corner. There are celebrations ahead of us. It's our job to reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, not let up a single bit in our tefillah. To reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to reach out to each other, to continue reaching out to each other, being mechazik each other, to daven for the cholim in our community, the cholim related to our community, kol chole Yisrael, and indeed all of mankind. Everyone should have a restful and enjoyable Shabbos. Haba aleinu l'tova.